Hello and welcome to our quarterly podcast, where we discuss activities to support the consistent application of IFRS accounting standards. My name is Bruce McKenzie, a member of the ISB and chair of the IFRS Interpretations Committee.
And I am Claire Dussert, a member of the committee. I am looking forward to talking about our June meeting, which had yet another agenda packed with IFRS 18 related matters.
It certainly did. Now, the committee met on the 16th and 17th of June. We discussed a number of matters and agreed to publish 8 tentative agenda decisions. 7 of these related to IFRS 18 and 1 to IFRS 10.
In this episode, we plan to focus on 2 of the discussions that generated the most debate. The first on whether a measure that includes hypothetical income and expenses can meet the definition of a management defined performance measure in IFRS 18. And the second on how a manufacturer lessor assesses whether its aggregated lease activity is a main business activity of providing financing to customers.
Let me open with the first topic. One of the matters discussed in June was a request asking whether a performance measure that includes hypothetical income and expenses can meet the definition of a management-defined performance measure, or MPM, in IFRS 18. By hypothetical, the request meant income and expenses that an entity has not recognized and will never recognize in its statement of financial performance, applying IFRS accounting standards. Now, the request really raised 2 sub-questions. Firstly, is such a measure a subtotal of income and expenses? And secondly, must it faithfully represent an aspect of the financial performance of the entity as a whole?
It's worth recalling that paragraph 117 actually says, an MPM is a subtotal of income and expenses that, among other things, an entity uses in public communications outside the financial statements to communicate management's view of an aspect of the financial performance of the entity as a whole. On the first sub-question, the committee observed that paragraph 117 contains no restrictions on how an entity calculates that subtotal. And paragraph BC357 in the basis for conclusions explains that the ISB deliberately placed no such restriction because restrictions might prevent entities from disclosing measures that users actually find useful. So the committee concluded that a measure, including hypothetical income and expenses, can be a subtotal of income and expenses.
The committee's view on the second sub-question, faithful representation, was that the phrase management's view of an aspect of the financial performance of the entity as a whole describes what the measure purports to represent. In other words, you shouldn't read an aspect of financial performance independently of management's view. And as paragraph BC360 in the basis for conclusions notes, faithful representation in this context isn't about whether a measure is good or bad. So the conclusion was that such a measure can be a subtotal and can faithfully represent what it purports to represent. And where it meets all the criteria for an MPM in IFRS 18, the entity then has to apply the disclosure requirements in paragraphs 121 to 125 of IFRS 18 for MPMs.
One thing that struck me in the discussion was the emphasis on the fact that to be an MPM, management must already be using the measure in public communications. The other point of emphasis was on the disclosure requirement for MPMs and in particular paragraph 123 and related requirement for an entity to label and describe an MPM in a clear and understandable manner that does not mislead users.
And there were genuinely differing views on this subject. Some members were comfortable drawing on practical examples. For instance, replacement cost type adjustments used in the oil and gas sector.
There were so real concerns from others, particularly on one of the examples included in the submissions, which was about a measure presenting an entity's results as if a major crisis, such as the COVID-19 pandemic, had never happened. Some members worried that an alternative scenario that never occurred can really be verified and might give too much weight to management's view at the expense of a faithful representation of performance. Others pointed to the labeling requirements as the natural guardrail. If you can't faithfully describe what the number is, then you have a problem.
Now, that's a fair reflection of discussion. The important point is that the committee didn't set out to bless or reject any particular example. In other words, the committee was not asked to provide a view as to whether it's appropriate for an entity to provide these or other measures in their public communications. Rather, the committee's tentative conclusion is that the principles and requirements in IFRS 18 provide an adequate basis for an entity to determine whether such a measure meets the definition of an NPM, and that the standard setting project isn't needed. We did, though, ask the staff to strengthen the references to the measures already being used in public communications to be an NPM and the disclosure and labeling requirements in the drafting of the tentative agenda decision.
Let me take us into the second topic. This was a request about a manufacturer or lessor, an entity that manufactures vehicles and then either sells them or leases them to customers. The question was how that entity assesses whether its lease activity, taking its finance leases and operating leases together, is a main business activity of providing financing to customers.
And the fact pattern is of particular importance here. The entity manages vehicle sales, finance leases, and operating leases together in one line of business. Its leases don't differ significantly in nature, but are classified as either finance or operating leases under IFRS 16. And for each lease contract, the entity enters into a refinancing arrangement with a bank that bridges the difference between the cash it receives and what it would have received on the sale. Now, those refinancing arrangements generate interest expense.
Exactly. And one of the reasons the assessment of the specified main business activity matters is the classification of that interest expense in the statement of profit or loss, particularly for the contracts classified as operating leases. The entity uses a single subtotal for its aggregated lease activities, similar to gross profit, as an important indicator of operating performance, and that subtotal includes the income and expense from both finance and operating leases, as well as the interest on the refinancing.
The committee's analysis considered that applying the requirements in IFRS 18, an entity uses judgment based on evidence. And paragraph 33 reminds us whether investing in assets or providing financing to customers is a main business activity is a matter of fact and not merely an assertion. Now, the factors that might provide evidence of an entity's main business activity in paragraph B34 include whether an entity uses a particular subtotal as an important indicator of operating performance. So, applying the requirements to this fact pattern, the committee's view was that it was likely that the entity's aggregate leasing activity is a main business activity of providing financing to customers, evidenced by the entity's use of that one subtotal for its aggregate lease activity.
Building on that, there were two observations members found particularly helpful. First, the fact that some of the leases are classified as operating leases does not preclude the aggregated lease activity from being a type that provides financing to customers. And second, also paragraph B32 does not list operating leases among its examples of entities that might provide financing to customers. That absence is not determinative. The list of examples is not exhaustive.
And a related question of whether the entity also has a main business activity of investing in assets, several members observed that once you conclude an entity is the main business activity of providing financing to customers, there is no requirement to continue analyzing whether the same activity is investing in assets. So in this particular fact pattern, having concluded on the financing question, the committee did not need to reach a conclusion on investing in assets. Now, I would note, however, that the committee did not consider or comment on the order in which an entity assesses whether an activity is investing in assets or providing financing to customers. We were careful, therefore, that the drafting of the tentative agenda decision does not imply any ordering.
So those were two of the more debated discussions, but they were part of a wider set of tentative agenda decisions in June, including several other IFRS 18 matters and a question on control assessment for a single investor fund under IFRS 10. The overall tentative conclusion for all the matters was that the principles and requirements in IFRS accounting standards provide an adequate basis for an entity to make the respective assessments, So standard setting is not needed to address those questions.
That's right. Now, all the tentative agenda decisions are open for comment until the 9th of September, 2026. And the tentative agenda decisions and details on how to comment can be found on our website. Thanks for listening, and we look forward to speaking to you again after the next committee meeting.
We hope you found this episode useful. If you want to learn more about how the IFRS Interpretations Committee works and why companies need to consider agenda decisions when applying IFRS accounting standards, visit ifrs.org for our explainer video and meeting summaries.